This is Iconic.
All right, we are live. So welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Nick and Becca and Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
Howdy.
We have a great show for you this several weeks. We're actually going to be talking about how to craft an iconic game. But we're able to do this thanks to our patrons. And so if you are on our Patreon, you have access to our Discord server where we took a lot of questions in. And where we're actually looking at, this is a live show. This is another one of our live shows. So this will probably be broken up on the podcast into several smaller, more digestible chunks. But for today, we're just going to hang out. We're going to talk. We're going to engage with you guys if you are on the chat. And we're just going to dive right into it. But before we do, Nick, do we have any new patrons?
Yeah, we had a new patron join our crew this week. This month. Rainier, if you're watching, welcome. We're glad that you're able to join our patronage and be able to enjoy the sort of extra goodies like being able to watch the live stream. So thank you.
Yes, thank you. Because again, we can only do this because of viewers like you. So let's get into it. This idea came up, I actually think, I don't remember whether it was Becca or I, or we were just talking back and forth about it, about how do we plan games? It was Becca. I thought that would be... That sounds like it. Becca's way smarter than I am. How to plan a game. It's a daunting task. And so we've just decided we're going to take an hour, maybe an hour and a half, and talk about how we plan our games. And this is going to cover everything from our stream games that Becca and myself run. Mark has participated in running one-shots on our games. To our home games. We all run a ton of home games. And so... I guess our first question, this one is from our patron, Becca. Also, she's a host as well as a client.
I was about to say, I'm more of the host asking all these questions because I really want to hear what everybody else has to say. And then our patrons supplied a bunch of questions that were much more interesting than mine. So,
you know. So, for the crew, for the Iconic podcast group, I should just say before we start, this will not be limited to 13th Age. This is going to be for all of the games that we run. But hopefully you'll be able to tease out some nuggets of what we do want to, you know, what you would use for 13th Age. So when you guys are preparing games, which do you prefer? Do you prefer planning a campaign or do you prefer starting with a one shot?
Becca.
Oh, okay. Sure. I will start. I think I prefer campaigns. I think this is because I over prepare. And so knowing that whatever I prepare can continue on down the road, it's just kind of nice. Whereas for a one shot, I'm never entirely sure if I will have enough or not enough stuff. Which then leads me, of course, to over-preparing and then going, oh, I really wish we could keep playing this because I have all these really cool things. Come back. Mm-hmm. So
I tend to prefer campaigns or at least longer adventures because I'm the same way. And when we get into kind of setup, we'll talk about this, but I prepare a lot for the world and then sort of... improv my way once I get my foundational work done. But when it comes to like, I want to try this new game out, I would much rather run like 5 or 6 one shots over the course of a month and a half and go, all right, which of these games did we like the best? Cause they're all new to us and then go from the campaign from there. Nick and Mark, what about you guys?
See, for me, I think I prefer running one shots more than a campaign. And I think that largely has to just do with the phase of life that I'm in right now, where I don't have a lot of extra time to devote into the planning. So being able to do some relatively quick prep for a one shot, get it scheduled, get it booked on the calendar, and then run through it, it fits me where I'm at right now. I also like the fact that with one shots, it seems like the consequences for messing up as a GM are lessened. So you can fiddle with things like house rules. You can, if there's a question on the table, it's easier to just let it swing, and it's not really going to come back and bite you, because once that session is over, or maybe two or three sessions, it's over. You just kind of pick up and move on with it. It's also fun to being with one shots. I like being able to play with new character concepts, without having to commit myself to another year or 2 years of gaming to really flesh out or just see how this character works, whether it be a system or a new class or something like that. But being able to just kind of dabble gives me a lot of enjoyment in one shots.
Yeah, I prefer running and playing in campaigns more. One shots definitely have their place. Like Jam said, if it's a new system that no one's played, it's like, hey, let's try a one shot of this and see if we like the flavor of it or the rules. For cons, it's definitely, I take cons, which I know is kind of leaning forward, are basically one shots, because you might run the same one shot three times in a weekend for a con. So they definitely have their place. And I would definitely say, when we say it's daunting, don't be afraid to GM, and one shots are perfect for that. Take a one shot. It's limited. You have so many characters. You have so much time. And like Nick said, if you mess up, there's no long lasting, 6 months down the road, hey, remember when you said we could do that? There's no long term consequence of that. So you do a one shot, and it's I think is great when you first start out.
Go ahead, Becca.
I was actually going to say, because both of you guys mentioned like homebrewing rules or sliding rules under the table and going, we'll deal with this later, or not at all because we're doing a one shot. Anytime that has happened, particularly when I started running games, when we came back to that rule, we actually then could stop and have a conversation of, is this what we want to keep going, or should we go back to maybe the rules as written? And which one did they like better? And then, I just jotted it down and kept going. And so I don't know that I've ever really had a problem with someone going, wait, you said it was this way before. Okay, well, does that actually work or does it not? It does? Cool. Well, then we'll keep going.
Yeah, I think, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about this later when it comes to creating our own content. But I think consistency is far more better than rules, necessarily cleaving to the rules as written. Because we've all played in games where the game has ground to a halt as the GM goes to find the one specific rule that exists instance. For this one specific instance that they forgot. And so I like I tend to make it pretty clear, hey, I'm going to make a rule at the table, and then afterwards I'll go back and look at it and we'll make a decision as a group kind of, how we're going to do this going forward. So, Mark, go ahead, Nick.
I was just going to say, I think maybe the direction that I was thinking in making that comment was maybe less to do about rules themselves, but more of like world rules. Mm. Like how can you use magic in this particular world, or how can you leverage this particular resource or this particular relationship to gain this sort of benefit? Those sorts of things, those can come back and bite you later on down the road if you end up letting, say this particular cantrip can be used in this spectacular fashion, in the first couple of sessions, and then 6 months down the road be like, oh, I want to use my cantrip to do this. I'm like, well, wait, time out. That's overpowered for a cantrip. Yeah, but I used it way back when. So sometimes I think it's more of those things than actually the fiddly mechanical bits.
Okay, that makes sense as well. Kind of, again, being consistent in the adjudication of how things work, both setting wise and rules wise. Now, Mark, I know you've run con games with me at
Genghis Khan
and at Starfest. Becca has come and joined me. Nick, have you run con games with us? I can't remember. We've been friends for so long. I can't actually remember if you've run ones with us.
I've done free RPG day games, but that's the closest to a con game that I've run.
Oh, that counts. How do you guys go about prepping? Because con games or store games that are like one shots for a big event, they're kind of different, right? There is a different expectation from people showing up, and maybe as GMs we have different expectations. So what do you guys think those expectations are for running maybe a con game versus a home game, and how do you prepare differently? If you do at all, you may not.
For me, well, one, if I'm going to run a one shot, be it free RPG day at our local friendly game store.
Shout out to Petri's, who is a proud sponsor of this game. Go check out their website at Petri's.
I think it's Petri's Family
Games. PetriesGames.com. They also have a digital store, an online store now. So if you don't have a friendly local game store, you can go order from them.
Yep. So I do pre-gens, and it's, hey, we've got a two-hour block. I prepare a lot more generic because I don't know the players who are going to show up. Mm-hmm. So I don't know their style. Is it going to be RP? Is it going to be more combat? So it's a general, here's, and it's usually a published adventure already. It's just easier. Here's some pre-gens. Explain the system, because you usually get a lot of new, hey, what's this game? Unless you're running, you know, the D&D or Pathfinder that seems like everybody plays. They're like, oh, yeah, I know this, but I like to run other games to expose people to things. Even as well-known as Shadowrun, I get a lot of players when I run that, like, hey, what's this game? So you should explain the rule set. Here's some generic characters and go with it. And a lot of times you'll start, it's not just your first level character, which, by the way, a shout out to DCC. If you want to do a con game, run a zero-level funnel. It's loads of fun.
Yes. I think for me, I'm far more willing to cut and to hand wave during a con game. Because you're right, you have a fixed time block. And usually at con games, schedules are packed so tightly that you can't go 5 minutes over. You can't go 10 minutes over because the players at your table have something else they have to be at that in that moment is what they want to be at most of all. And so I am far more willing to cut large swaths of an adventure just to keep the pace rolling. I want it to feel very cinematic and memorable so that when people think back on it, they're like, man, that was a cool game. I should go buy it.
Yeah, and it's definitely instead of, and we've talked about this before, you know, the railroad, you know, roller coasters are on rails and they're fun. Instead of a lot of the long investigation, it's kind of like, hey, look, here's this clue that you find. Instead of, it's going to handle a lot of stuff, I think, in a con because, you know, like GM said, in 2 hours, we have to end because the players want to go somewhere and maybe the GM wants to go play in another game somewhere else mm-hmm. since I'm at the con. Yeah, so it's things kind of move along a little bit different pace. That's kind of how I do it, kind of more generic. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I really struggle with in the planning for and adapting to is I never really know how many players are going to be sitting down at the table.
Right.
So, you know, I know there's always a table cap. It's like, I'm not going to take more players than X. But, you know, the preparation is very different if you're talking about two players versus six players. So how do you guys, I mean, you guys run a lot more con games than I do. How do you adjust in your planning, prepare for that?
So the few con games that I have run, I've come to the table with an adventure already and pre-gens. And I think that helps in that I don't have to plan for anything outside of this piece of paper. Mm-hmm. Because this is as far as that they're going to get in 2 hours. And they're either going to survive or they're going to die, because I've run some Call of Cthulhu games at con.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there's fewer people, there is often a lot more of handing, like, oh, hey, roll a spot hidden check for me real fast. And when they succeed, great, this is what you find. Whereas with six people and they're all talking to each other, eventually one of them will say, hey, we should check underneath that stone block. And so I do feel like when I sit down at the con, I kind of know, okay, here's an important clue that they have to find. I'm either going to hand it to them, or if they say something in this amount of time, like, then they'll have found it themselves. I do kind of try to plan like, okay, I'm only going to let them sit in this one room for like 15 minutes, unless they're all enjoying themselves. If they're all enjoying themselves, then okay, fine. Sit here as long as you guys want. But I might start pushing you guys towards the really creepy sounds in the other room. You guys should go check it out.
Well, and
kind of, yeah, you should, Mark.
You should. You totally should. I think, like, for most of, at least for me, for most of the con games that I run the same game multiple times over the weekend. Mm-hmm. So what I like to do is I like to take one of my other gaming groups during the week and go, hey, I'm running this game at a convention this weekend. What I would really like to do is I would really like to run this for you guys, because even having that one session before I go into the con, kind of getting the feel and the arc and the planning done, makes it so much easier. And then by the end of the game, by the end of the weekend, you've run the same, like Becca ran the Necropolis 5 or 6 times, a little 2-hour Call of Cthulhu game. By the end of it, you're like, I don't even need my notes, because, and so it's far easier to adapt on the fly. At least that's for me, if that makes sense. Mark, anything to add there before we got a question from the patrons that I think kind of dovetails nicely into this.
No, and it definitely helps. I think if you run the same one over and over again, especially the bigger cons where you get different groups of people, if you get the same people that want to complain, and you're like, okay, let's continue the adventure. But yeah, it's easier for prep wise just to do the one.
Yeah. So one of our patrons, Ben, asked the question, with the exception of this is for the kind of the iconic production team, but I do feel like this dovetails nicely into this con game discussion. With the exception of the Friday night stream, which most of the games that we run on Iconic Production are more niche, Call of Cthulhu, 13th Age, Torg, Fading Suns, than kind of the more popular TTRPGs. So what's our strategy to entice viewers, or in the case of a con game, players, to play a game that they may not have heard of, bought yet, or have any experience with? As I was pondering this, like for me, I feel like GM enthusiasm is contagious. If you're excited to run a game at a con, players in that convention game will pick up on that. I can't tell. We sold out of Call of Cthulhu, the con that Becca ran the Necropolis, because she was so excited about running it that everyone left the table. And there was at least one or two people who went to the store at the convention and were like, I want this game. This was awesome. So I think our enthusiasm, especially with games like Fading Suns and Torg, have translated directly into the people who are participating in that, whether it be the players at the table or viewers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I was thinking of that con game because, yeah, I've done pre-tabletop day, and I've done a Jekyll's Release game. Yeah, at Petri's. But for both of those, people who showed up at the game store were familiar either with the game store or with us. And so at the con, when we're completely new, I know there was at least one group that joined my table, primarily because I looked approachable. They kind of wandered in, and I smiled and waved, and they were like, what is this? Like, oh, good, somebody who knows what's happening. Let me go talk to you. Like, what in the world is going on? And so being able to explain my game and tell them, like, I would run it for you if you were interested in joining. They were like, oh, we've never done anything like this, but thanks for being nice enough to introduce us to this. Yeah, we'll sit down. And, yeah, they were one of the groups that, one of the members of this like 4-person group was like, I'm going to run this game for our group now. And they went and bought the Call of Cthulhu. And so really, to get people excited into any game, you kind of just have to invite them.
Mm-hmm. I'm not above leveraging the connection to the more popular rule sets either. There was one free RPG day that was running, and I was running 13th Age, and someone who's obviously looking for a table, And I was like, well, why don't you come over and join me? He's like, well, I was really wanting to play 5e. I'm like, well, you know, this is, it's similar. You know, the some of the game designers of D&D, they kind of went back to the scratch and built a game that they would want to play. And this is that. Why don't you come join us with it? Mm-hmm. And he had a blast with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though 13th Age is kind of niche-y, it's similar enough to the big names that it's an easy grab. And well, it's like that, but it's just a little bit different.
Right. And I find also that, like, in the case of Call of Cthulhu, well, do you like horror? Or in the case of Torg, well, do you like cinematic action? Like, there are always some good, simple ways of going, here is a touchstone that you need that will make you excited about playing this game.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end of part one of our Planning an Iconic Game live show. We will be back in 2 weeks with part two.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.